It being 2:15 and there being at least three members here, we'll start the committee hearing. And this is the continuation of the one that I ran out of time in, and hopefully we won't run out of time this time. But so it's a continuation of Parks and Trails, and we're starting with Erica Rivers, the DNR Assistant Commissioner. And are we spending a lot of time on this report, really?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Ms. Rivers.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Erica Rivers. I'm Assistant Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Madam Chair, members, thank you again for letting us come back today to finish our testimony on the consensus recommendation for the legacy Parks and Trails funds. I'd like to just take a few minutes and a few slides here to go through, set a little bit of context for why we're here again today, just to refresh your memory and get us all on the same page. As we mentioned last time, we were charged to produce a consensus recommendation for the split of the Parks and Trails legacy funds by the 2011 legislature. And that was in Article 3, Section 7, as indicated up here on the slide. Wanted to had a lot of nice conversation at the beginning of last hearings, but it also indicated that there might have been a little bit of confusion about how all of these different pieces or moving parts fit together. I thought I might take this opportunity to just quickly go over all the different reports that were mentioned in the last hearing. This is really all set together with the report on the top, which is the Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. This is a 25-year strategic plan for Parks and Trails that covers all three of the major players or major systems within Minnesota parks. So it includes Minnesota State Parks and Trails, the Metro County or Regional Parks and Trails, as well as Greater Minnesota Trails. From that plan, which was developed over the course of about a year and thousands of hours of input and thousands of public input, one of the major recommendations that came from that plan was that we form a legacy advisory committee to oversee the four pillars that were outlined within that legacy report. And those four pillars are connecting people to the outdoors, acquiring land and providing additional opportunities, taking care of what we have already in the state, as well as coordinating with all of our partners. Unfortunately, that last pillar we haven't done a lot, or we've had some struggles with over the past two biennia, and that has led to a lot of acrimony and back and forth in front of this committee in the past. So at the end of the last biennium, the legislative process, the legislature asked us to form a subcommittee of that legacy advisory committee to try to arrive at some kind of consensus recommendation for how to split these funds. So what you're seeing up here on the screen in the lower left-hand corner is that legacy funding advisory report. It's the consensus recommendation that you have in front of you. The third piece of this puzzle, then, is on the lower right-hand corner, and Jeff Schoenbauer was kind enough to join us and briefly introduce this report to you all last hearing. And he is here again today to hopefully finish up his testimony to explain what that report is. In essence, there was a lot of concern about the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails of regional significance and if that system was well-organized, knew what their priorities were, knew what some of the visitation numbers were, et cetera. And so what they did is allocated $175,000, that's the former legislature, to do some more thorough analysis on that Greater Minnesota system. So as I said, Jeff will be here later to tell you a little bit more about that study. Now, with this legacy funding group, we were tasked by the legislature for Tom Landwehr, Commissioner of the Department, to convene a group that would provide these recommendations for you. Tom, in turn, had a memorandum of understanding with Susan Haag, Metropolitan Council Chair, as well as Marsha Larson, who is the chair, former chairwoman of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition. And each of those three then appointed three people to represent their interests on the legacy funding group. And you'll see there's the asterisks next to three of those names, Bob Bierscheids, Chuck Kartax, and Tom Ryans. Those members are sort of the liaisons to that major legacy advisory group that was on the top of all this. And so they interacted with the funding group and to try to assure that what we were doing in the funding group meshed well with what the larger legacy advisory group was also recommending. So Susan Haig from the Metropolitan Council appointed Bob Bierscheid, who's a former City of St. Paul park director. John Gunyu, former administrator of the City of Minnetonka, also currently serving on the Three Rivers Park District, and Greg Mapp, who was also here last week to talk to you all, Ramsey County Parks and Recreation. Tom Landwehr appointed myself, assistant commissioner with the DNR, as well as former deputy Parks and Recreation Director Chuck Kartek, as well as Joe Krasinka, who was our regional director for Minnesota DNR. And then finally, Marsha Larson, selected to represent Greater Minnesota, Tom Ryan from Olmsted County Parks, Pat Swatsky from Wright County Parks, and Tom Schmitz from the City of New Ulm. So collectively, this group of nine people had about 250 years of government service, as well as a focus on parks and recreation throughout the state of Minnesota. What we were really after when we, early on in the process we met, as I said, this was about an eight-month process, was a data-driven formula by which we could allocate legacy funds across all three park systems throughout Minnesota. And so what we were striving for at the beginning, you'll see as an example on top, was to take a bunch of different variables or metrics and attempt to arrive at a distribution using things like population, percentage of acres, trail miles, operating expenditures, and visitation numbers. What we found, however, as we walked through the process, was that we didn't have comparable numbers between the different systems. So, for example, for trail miles, Metropolitan measures, the Met Council measures their trails by a conversion to acres, whereas at DNR, we use a linear measure of miles. And then the data for outstate Minnesota, greater Minnesota, is actually fairly incomplete, and so they were unable to provide that metric. So the result of that was some differences of opinion on how do you estimate those numbers. So over the course of these 6 months, we tried hard to arrive at reasonable estimates, tried to find ways to compromise on variables, and in the end, it just wasn't possible to get there. So what we did instead was move back and take a higher level look at this, a more conceptual model, where we would break down the allocation based on a conceptual model that emphasized what the legacy plan emphasized, which was the importance of near-home recreation opportunities. And so what we did was we gave that emphasis about 80% of the allocation. We recognized that over the course of this legacy funding, right now the split between population in the metropolitan seven-county area and greater Minnesota is about 50-50. And so we, if you're following down the left-hand side of this graphic, we allocated 40% of the allocation to the Metro Regional Park System, and then 40% to greater Minnesota near home recreation opportunities. 20% of that then went to greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails, and 20% to state parks and trails of statewide significance. Okay. And then
yep,
go ahead.
Representative Wiginius, do you have a question?
When we were looking at this last time, and I asked the question about destination parks and trails opportunities, and you had only said that was the DNR parks and trails. And since then, we have had testimony that says that 45% of the metro usage of trails are from folks outside. So 55% is inside, 45% outside. So I stumble over this assumption that we're not
a destination
in the metro area. So, I mean, I think the numbers show that indeed the metro parks are destination parks.
Thank you, Representative Wiginius. I couldn't agree more, Madam Chair, members. This was a conceptual model. We had to make some, it had to be arrived at with some give and take, frankly. I'm not familiar with the metropolitan visitorship. I am familiar with the DNR visitorship and know that 45% of our statewide parks and trails are visited by metropolitan people from the metro Minnesotans. There are also 20% that come, or roughly 18 to 20% that come from out of state, so beyond our borders. I also know that in Minnesota, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources manages about 17% of the trail miles within the metropolitan area and three major parks, one of which gets almost 1 million visitors a year. This had to stay at the conceptual level, because once we started tweaking and saying, well, why don't we have 18% be destination to DNR, then we started going down that same rat trail that we were going down before with the allocation formula. So we really tried to keep it up at a conceptual level, recognizing, though, that there are destination places, certainly, within the metropolitan area as well.
Madam Chair, if I could follow
okay.
up.
Representative Williams.
Well, from what I hear from your testimony, the numbers actually in the metro and state parks are the same, 55%, or maybe it's close, 55% of folks in the metro are local, and 45% mm-hmm. from someplace else. That's the testimony from Mr. Steffrud that we got. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that the state parks, it's 45% are local?
45% are from the metropolitan area.
45% are from the metropolitan area, which means that then the numbers are identical, because 55% would be more local. Mm-hmm. So it's just, so to make a split and say that one is destination and one is not, is still the premise of all of this. Undercuts the conclusion.
Ms. Madam Chair, members, thank you, Representative Wagenius. Again, we did have to try to keep this at a large conceptual level, recognizing that there are destination opportunities in both systems. This was a way that we could recognize some of the tourism dollars that come to the state parks and trails of statewide significance, and support that system.
Well, I mean, it's funny to make one assumption for one system and then not make the same assumption for the other system, even if it's simple. Mm-hmm. But we'll just go on.
Okay.
Oh, since we do have a pause, Representative Wagenius, having very carefully read both sets of minutes, moves to adopt the minutes from the 9th and 10th meetings. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. So in conclusion, I just want to, because I know you have a full agenda today, want to just restate emphatically that the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources does support this consensus recommendation by the committee and respectfully applauds the committee for coming to that conclusion. We do think there are some major benefits with this split as was laid out. We think it helps provide that new spirit of collaboration that we're all looking forward to. It helps us move toward a more stable, data-driven formula into the future. We have allocated about 0.5% of the legacy funds in this recommendation to an interim strategy where more data can be collected on all three systems, so we have apples-to-apples comparisons. It allows for some predictability in funding as we move forward and try to focus on those four pillars, the goals of that legacy plan. And it builds on the spirit and foundation of the recommendations for near-home and destination recreation. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any further questions for Ms. Rivers? Representative Wagenius.
One of the things that troubles me about all that we're doing in parks and trails is that we've had all sorts of reports, or all sorts of plans, I should say, and no financial plans. And so we talk about inputs, but, and that's the division that you've come up with, which is an input, but I have no concept of, well, I know we're not funding DNR parks.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Wienis, could you speak louder and more in the microphone?
Okay.
Sorry.
My biggest concern is that we've had all sorts of plans, but we have no financial plans. So I know that DNR is very short of money, extraordinarily short. We don't have enough money to do our trails.
we don't have enough money to do the infill. We don't have enough money for deferred maintenance. And it looks like we're cutting the parks money this year in the budget. I mean, that's the proposal. And so to create a new system without knowing what it's going to cost us, or maybe you all did come up with that and I missed it. Do we know what it's going to cost us to have 130 new parks when they took away the matching funds, so apparently we're buying it all, and how much we'll be responsible for the operating? I mean, did the folks get into that detail?
Madam Chair, members.
Ms. Rivers.
Thank you for that question. I think that I would defer the answer to that question to Jeff Schoenbauer, who's on the testimony next. He was the one that actually worked with Greater Minnesota on the 175 study to really start helping redefine what the priority strategies are for Greater Minnesota. So I think he's probably better positioned. I will say answer the questions about that system, I will say for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Cortland Nelson will be testifying in your committee tomorrow, of course, or Thursday, I believe. And he will have better information about what we're doing in Minnesota State Parks and Trails to really look, take a nice hard look at our system and where our priorities lie, recognizing that the funding isn't there necessarily to do all of the things that we would love to do.
Okay. Well, I'm anxious to get through everyone on the agenda, and I'm sure. But is this a follow-up that you want to do right now, Representative Virginia? So,
just a quick comment.
I'm sure people will be staying around till the end of the meeting, so we will be able to bring them back. So, but
okay, just a quick observation. I mean, I think what we're going to hear tomorrow is we're going to shrink one park system, and I don't know how much we're going to shrink it, or that's going to be the proposal from DNR. And then we are going to create a new system, but we don't know how much money that new system is going to cost us. That's. I'm hoping that as we go through this, those two questions will be answered. Mm-hmm. How much are we shrinking the state parks, and do we have enough money to pay even for a shrunken system, if that's your proposal? And how much is it going to cost to create a new system?
And part of this gets back to the question I raised at the whole point, which was when I looked at the proposal, a proposal that's putting out $100,000 a year to study and figure out how we're going to do the metropolitan, how we're going to do the regional park system, mm-hmm. as we're doing it, made little, I would far rather see some of that money front-loaded and deciding how we're going to do it before we put the money out to do it. But, you know, that's going to be our committee decision. Whatever we do will be our committee decision as we finish. And as we also look in environment and natural resources, this morning we did talk a little bit about the deficit, mm-hmm. the deficit spending from the Department of Natural Resources on their lands policy. And so I think we'll probably get into that again. But
thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. And wait a minute. Don't go yet. Some questions. Representative McDonald and then Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. A question for Ms. Rogers. In 2012, of the distributed of more than $19 million in grants to help local governments and units with parks and trails, I'm curious for 2013 and or from 12, is any of some of that grant money helping schools with the new the Safe Routes school program that is in the news right now? A lot of the school districts are applying for the Safe Routes to help curb obesity, and does some of the funding can come from this committee or grants to help in that endeavor?
Madam Chair, members.
Ms. Rivers.
I think that's a really great question. I'm going to have to get back to you on that, whether any of the Greater Minnesota grants were spent specifically on those routes. I know that 50% of our legacy grants to Greater Minnesota are spent on trails and 50% are spent on parks, but I'll have to follow up with that information for you.
Okay.
Mm. Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Rivers.
Okay.
Madam Chair, do you know the answer to that at
no.
all? No. Would that be under the purview, Madam Chair, of this?
We'll know before we finish.
Before okay. we finish. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Not today, maybe, but oh. we'll know before we really finish. Okay, it's a good question. And again, it's one of the other principles whenever the kind of principles I enunciated, whenever someone comes up with something that falls along with them, I want to reinforce that. And that's one of the things is I really want to, even though legacy is this, has this supplementing and not supplanting, I really want to see us working as much as possible into all of the programs together, and also into other existing programs, as long as we're doing things to enhance them and so forth. I guess I give my ideal project, if we, when we get to specific projects out of this issue, would be something that was a trail that was funded through Parks and Trails, that also was partly a wildlife corridor for bringing two sets of populations together from the Lasard function, that had a river through it, that had purification of that river through the Clean Water Fund, and had art along it somewhere. That would be the great, if we can get one like that and goes by the zoo. Okay, so look for that. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Assistant Commissioner Rivers, Representative Wagenius seems to imply from her questioning that that the vision for this Parks and Trails money for the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks is to purchase and operate 130 parks across the state of Minnesota. Is that your understanding of what the vision is for that portion of the fund?
Madam Chair and members, respectfully, no, that's not what I think they have planned for this. But again, I would defer to Jeff Schoenbrower. He has done the research on this and written the report, and he's next up for testimony, so I'll defer to him.
Thank you. I look forward to his testimony.
Jeff actually started to say something when he was here last time, and of course we didn't have time to get to it, but I think we are really looking forward to his testimony. Okay, and since he's next on the agenda, we'll go there. Thank you very much, and you'll be around if we have other things. Mr. Schoenbrower.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm glad to be back in front of you again. And
you need to say who you are for the tech.
Yes, Jeff Schoenbrower with Schoenbrower Consulting, LLC. I'm a consultant right now for Greater Minnesota, working on their strategic plan and helping them think through many of these issues that we've been talking about. And just in the form of background, so you have a little sense again who I am, I've had the opportunity over the last 30 plus years to work with all of these different entities. I think I've done about a dozen regional park and trail master plans for the metro area. I've worked with the DNR on a number of projects, both in the past and currently. I was the lead author for the planning and design manual for trails, currently working on Lake Vermilion State Park campground design, did the design for the Cuyuna mountain bike trails, and I've also had the chance to work with any number of local communities in terms of developing parks and trails and open space system plans. So with that as a backdrop, I guess I'm here to share as objectively as possible whatever insights I might have, and fully recognizing that my own perspectives are only part of a broader storyline. And I'd like to start here by reflecting on what I think Erica Rivers said last time, is that and we take seriously, both in Greater Minnesota as elsewhere, is this notion that Minnesotans expect us to do something remarkable with the money. And I think that's essentially the context which we're working with in Greater Minnesota. After the last testimony, I'd like to just initially share some thoughts from what Greater Minnesota's read was on that, and then get into the heart of some recommendations that I have for your consideration as we go forward. And picking up where we left off at the last hearing, I just want to assure you that Greater Minnesota understands the importance of doing the due diligence necessary to create and implement a system plan and make the hard choices about what warrants legacy funding, and then acting on good faith in good faith on those choices they have made. And I think they've already reflected that effort in showing careful consideration of this funding agreement and its implications before they signed on to it. And essentially, as is true with all the other entities, everybody agrees that it's not a great solution, and frankly, Greater Minnesota feels like they got the short end of the stick. Nonetheless, they embrace this with the idea of collaboration and working through these issues and so forth. And I think it's Greater Minnesota's opinion that DNR did essentially the same thing and went through their internal due diligence and signed on accordingly. But as we reflect back on the testimony of last time, it brings to question where exactly Metro Parks is as far as Greater Minnesota is concerned. Did they do the due diligence that was expected of them to come to a conclusion that they would support and sign on to? And so one of the questions that Greater Minnesota has, I guess, at this hearing and as part of the public record is exactly where is Metro Parks in this storyline? Are they standing behind signing on to that? Did they do that in good faith and with due diligence themselves? And Greater Minnesota would be interested in finding out where they stand on that. But from my perhaps unique vantage point, the answer to these questions is particularly important here in that it seemed that this group, as a group, we are getting beyond past parochialism and rising to our better professional instincts in working through these types of challenge issues that we face. And as Erica pointed out earlier, there's simply no easy, quick formula that's going to help us derive at the perfect solution as we sit here today. And I don't think it's an overstatement that most everyone saw the funding committee exercise as the first real attempt to actually prove that. I just hope that that doesn't turn out to be a false hope, especially in light of the fact that we are collectively responsible for some $1 billion over the course of the legacy fund, and it's our collective responsibilities to spend that wisely. So with respect to Greater Minnesota planning efforts, which I'll speak to now, the following lays out where I think things are at, along with three key recommendations that I see as being vital to ultimate success. And again, within the context of these recommendations, there's room for ample room for a variety of other perspectives that are equally as legitimate. But I present those somewhat with this notion of disruptive thinking or trying to look at things outside the box so that we're making sure we're not making easy choices and instead focusing on good choices. In terms of background, obviously the legacy plan and other studies define the need for a true system in Greater Minnesota without any sense of all what that really means. I think what I take away from it was this sense and recognition that there's something missing out there, an unmet demand that's clearly there. And as we've talked repeatedly about whether it's 130 parks and 35 trails, to me the problem with those numbers is that it only reflects a baseline judgment and not enough due diligence and vetting to really understand what that number should be. And unfortunately, what it does on the Greater Minnesota side is perhaps create unreasonable expectations. And then on the other side of the ledger in Metro, you have this sense of, are they going to overreach and try to do more than really is necessary? So I would just simply ask that you set that aside that number and understand, at least as we understand it today, is that there is clearly latent demand out there. There hasn't been much investment in Greater Minnesota regional level parks in the last 30 years. Some in the granting staff that I've talked to, past grants and granting staff and so forth would suggest less than 10 or 20 million in regional parks over that period of time. So it's really insignificant. So my perspective, and we're going into a large vetting process here and trying to make some sense of this, is there's almost these low-hanging fruit, no-brainer regional amenities that need money and they could use it today. And those aren't a problem. What I think Greater Minnesota's planning effort is, and perhaps DNR's as well, is that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years out from now, we start to have to really understand where we're at so that each dollar of investment is really well done. Now, keep in mind that our goal here then in Greater Minnesota's planning effort is after this period of time, whether it's 3 years or 4 years or whatever that takes, is the legislature, I think, will have a clear understanding of merits of projects from A to Z, essentially. And in my own mind, having worked in these areas for years, is it'll be obvious to me where the ultimate cutoff line will be as far as what's regional and what is not. I can't tell you what that number is today, but I suspect it's not 130. And that's what we see as our obligation to you folks, is that we want to make sure that you have clear choices and address these issues of what's sustainable and so forth going forward. Now, in terms of currently where we're at...
If I could just interrupt for a moment and say something. The problem is, and I've never been on this committee before, so it's a new experience to me, but on every appropriations committee that I've been on before, and I've been on them since for 40 years, essentially, we usually look at justification before we do the appropriation. You know, this is the first time where I've seen the argument made that we do the appropriation and we watch it and we figure it out as we're going along. So the thing I've kind of asked is that with some help, probably, I think there are things that are clearly have the justification, you know, clearly have the justification for funding. There's some principles we've seen in the metropolitan parks, which maybe there's some lessons and maybe we ought to apply. For example, the metropolitan parks have huge amount of local support, so I don't know if we want to put matching funds into these or require some evidence of local, you know, of local support, local funding before we do it. Or maybe it's not reasonable because of the tax base to require the same amount. But these are the questions that I want. I'm not pretending to have the answers now, but I kind of don't think that this, as I look through this report, I don't think this report gave us the answer. And coming up with a list of 130 just kind of reemphasizes that to me. So I think we want to, how we can use this concept, and I don't think there's anyone here in this room. I guess I'm the most inner city legislator that exists, but just that we don't believe that there isn't a reasonable concept for regional parks in what we call Greater Minnesota. I'm sorry, my former colleague Linda Scheid is no longer with us because she always said the rest of the state is then lesser. That makes the rest of the state lesser Minnesota. But so anyway, that's I think what we're trying to do, to decide as we move on what kind of process can we make to make that determination up front, and what kind of rules should we have in place, which maybe need to be modified as we go along. And we're perfectly amenable whether we're here as this final comes to its end or not. But I think some of us are just saying that we need to go in a more not necessarily slower, but in a more rational, not necessarily slower in terms of amounts of money, but more rational in terms of what the money's spent on. So that's what we're hoping that you'll help us do.
Yes, Madam Chair, that is, in essence, where we're at in the process right now, and it's, in fact, starting Thursday, is we're starting to vet these 130 possible regionally significant properties and trails, and using the criteria that we set forth in the plan. Now, keep in mind that the baseline classifications are, in fact, modeled off of what we're using currently in the regional parks in the metro area. That being said, they're tweaked to accommodate the needs of Greater Minnesota. For example, there's greater emphasis in all likelihood on specialty-type regional parks that complement a state park or trail that might be in the same region. So I'm perfectly confident in saying right here that by this fall, which I believe is the end of the next funding cycle, there's no problem whatsoever to identify the low-hanging fruit and invest in it as in good conscience as Minnesotans and do some wonderful things in Greater Minnesota. And because those projects have been sitting there with master plans for 10, 15, 20 years. I think of Quarry Park up in Stearns County. I did the master plan for that in 1995, and it remains underfunded. So I think from our perspective, we can have some short-term solid determinations on where to spend money, but we can also position ourselves going down the road, not only to understand what we want to do and how Greater Minnesota's system interrelates with DNR's system, which is going to be quite an important consideration going forward. But I also think the legislature can be confident that the process that we've got in place here will give you folks the chance to draw that cutoff line in 3 or 4 years. This is what we are going to spend money on, and that's what we're going to do. And I'm quite confident that that's very doable.
Well, I kind of what I'm hoping that you'll do is you'll point out that low-hanging fruit to us before the third week in May, when we have to get out of here instead of the fall. It doesn't mean that we won't make changes or we sure won't have other things to be able to do, but we'd love to have some advice before the third week in May. And you beat me to saying Quarry Park. That's the one I always give. That's the one I always give as an example. And I hope it's not the only park I know that should be a
sure
regional park in Greater Minnesota. But that's a great example of something that's totally missing in any of the other park systems. and is, you know, totally unique and ought to have, obviously, if we've had an unfunded 10-year plan, ought to be getting more funding from someplace. But anyway, sure. Representative Hausman, did you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And mine is not necessarily a question that I assume anyone has an answer for today, but I think we're sort of moving in a new direction, something we haven't done before, an entity that we haven't done. And it always makes me wonder about past history. And I would just use the park in one of my cities as the example, in Como Park. Maybe I'll assign my committee, my city, the responsibility of looking up this history. But I'm assuming that at one point was a local park, total local responsibility. And as it grew and as other activities were added, it soon became something totally different. And more we began to see it as something of more regional significance, just in terms of the users. And so it might be helpful to know what's the history of current regional parks. Where were they originally funded? Were they a local responsibility until they became something different? Because if we're moving in a new direction, history can sometimes inform us about what might be the best direction to transition. So that's more amusing than MUI.
I do apologize because I had thought about having the legislator who was the originally carried the bill for the Metropolitan Park System, one of former Representative Jim Cassily, in to talk about that, because that was so unique when he carried it. He was someplace, I think, far and warm and exotic until yesterday, and I didn't manage to call him in time to get him on today. I'd left a message, but he probably hadn't gotten that far back in his messages yet. It's probably not so, but hopefully we'll get him at some other time to answer some of these questions, because I think they are. Okay.
I'll continue, Madam Chair. And I the representative's point is well taken, and I think some of my forthcoming commentary will start to get into some of those issues a little bit more, at least how we're perceiving it. So again, I just picking up here then, I'm quite confident that the process that the strategic plan that I think each of you now have a copy of and will be our guidepost and move us forward in a constructive manner with Greater Minnesota. I think, you know, I'm looking at a May time frame in terms of exhibiting to you what might be a regional park in Greater Minnesota. I think we can provide you with some indicators of that so you have some actual physical means to judge that. I think by this fall we could certainly be able quite comfortably to recommend and be able to say this is what this year's allotment, I think, of $8 million would be, which frankly isn't all that much when you think about it under the current split that's recommended. So you could literally spend that in two spots if you wanted to, or one. So I'm confident about that. I do have some core recommendations, though, that I think will open up, frankly, some other points of conversation that's important to Greater Minnesota. First of all, is this the first recommendation is to formally establish Greater Minnesota as the third leg of the stool. And essentially here what Greater Minnesota is saying is, if we're going to be held accountable for our decisions or lack thereof, then we at least want to have the responsibility and the ability to act on those and be accountable to that. And I want to stress that Greater Minnesota has no interest in becoming a big bureaucracy. They simply want to have enough support and capacity to adequately plan the system and make meaningful and informed decisions on where to invest the dollar. That's all they're looking for. My second recommendation comes in terms of, or deals with this issue of collecting data and doing research. With Greater Minnesota, of the strong opinion that this whole subject requires a broader, more comprehensive review to ensure that we are collectively collecting meaningful information and that we are all being held accountable as to how that data is and is not used. And this is especially important when we're talking about allocating legacy and other funds based on our collective understanding of what truly is needed and valued. I'd like to start with a couple of examples highlighting concerns about the usefulness of information we collect and how loosely used information become problematic. And One of the things that Greater Minnesota is more than aware of is this notion of visits per year to the different systems. And I just want to, by example, illustrate how one has to be careful with this information because it can be easily misconstrued and, frankly, misused. I live in Minneapolis, and if I get on my bike and do a bike 30-mile bike ride, I will literally be counted 10 times on my favorite route. So that's 10 visits that I've made to the regional park system in the metro area. If I go to Lake Wobegon Trail and ride that same 30 miles, I'll be counted once, maybe twice, if I get off the trail and get a Dairy Queen or something. If I go to Lake Itasca State Park and ride the Loop Road twice, I'll probably get counted once as I enter the park. So you can start to see that these data, whereas they're important for their purpose, because everybody uses it for a purpose, it is not conveniently comparative across systems at this point, and I think Erica might have alluded to the fact that we need to do a better job of that. So the notion that Metro Parks has 44 million visits and DNR has 9 and Greater Minnesota, by all judgment, has a couple of dozen the way it sounds, that is simply not comparative information, and one has to be careful about that. The other thing that we have to be cautious about is there's inconsistencies in research. DNR's trail research suggests, if I understand it correctly myself, that there's a decline in per capita participation in trail use. But if you compare that against the visitation uses on metro area trails, it suggests that everything is going up. Now, I'm not a researcher, so I don't understand the disconnect, but we have to be careful that we're suggesting that we have all these answers, and frankly, we have to be careful that all of these measurement tools and stuff are really serving our purposes. We have to dig deeper into these issues and so forth. And one of the things that I think really drove this home to me was an interview that I happened to see with Bill Gates, and he was asked what he thought public sector needed to do to be successful. And he said, one is to set clear goals, two is to implement against that with clear process, and three is to measure performance. And his feeling was is that we, on the public sector, simply do an inadequate job of measuring performance. And I would argue that that is part of the Achilles heel we have collectively as well. We are not doing the due diligence, in my opinion, necessary to truly inform our decisions, whether that's Metro, DNR, or Greater Minnesota.
You know, I think some of these decisions can possibly be aided by modeling of some sort. As you say, why are these numbers going in opposite directions? I immediately decide, without looking at any data, was that we know that there's a shrinking, more senior population in Greater Minnesota, and that we know that in the metropolitan area there's an expanding, much younger population going, and that seems to fit in exactly with who we might think might be trail users, without saying that as if it's a fact. I'm just, you know, trying to think of a reason for as you say it. And what bothers me a little bit is this Greater Minnesota established as the third leg of a stool, when we imply that all these stools kind of have to be equal, and we have two of the stool, and where the DNR, and again, this doesn't have to be so, but it, and when the DNR part of leg of that stool is almost entirely out of the metropolitan area, it's a little problem if we're considering these legs of a stool you think of always being totally equal. And it's a little problem about how you think about that.
But yeah. To your comment, Madam Chair, I haven't drawn any conclusions in my own mind about equal or not, or who should get X dollars or another. I think what I would suggest the legislature do is, and I think Erica Rivers was getting, and Greater Minnesota is the reason that this proposal is in front of you now, as imperfect as it is it gives us all breathing room to try and figure this out while we still have the opportunity to make some investments in these systems that we know are wanting, frankly. But when you look at the total dollar difference, if you shift percentages over the next few years, we're talking about $8 or $10 million. Now, that's real money to everybody, but in the context of $1 billion, it seems to me that the legislature should ask all parties to make sure that all of our plans are really up to speed, that we're measuring performance adequately and proving, frankly, our case. And having worked within these systems for 30 years now, I see both the positives and negatives here. And I think it's presumptuous to suggest, though, that only Greater Minnesota has a high bar to meet here. I think it's reasonable to expect all parties to do greater diligence on these issues and take a look at things. And so where I'm finishing up my second recommendation is I think that there's some merit, and here I'm just trying purposefully to use a little disruptive thinking as the business community tries would suggest in these cases, is perhaps to create an independent research performance management think tank type function that serves all three entities. That way we can get away from this notion of somebody counting differently. And I'm not suggesting, again, another bureaucracy here. What I'm suggesting is that we take the research capacity of DNR, Metro Parks, and whomever, and consider that group working together on these issues to figure out why we have discrepancies in knowledge and how do we actually bridge difference in data uses and let the researchers tell us how that should look, as opposed to us downstream from that that may find creativity, too much creativity in how we interpret that data. There's also this notion of performance measurement and so forth. And in Greater Minnesota's case, for example, I think we have to be more conscious of these issues like economic impact factors, demand and trend research, what does the public really want, how can we better anticipate the next best thing, and get into some true quality-based performance measures, what is working, what is not. And I would suggest beyond this notion of just miles of trails and acres of land, those are inadequate, in my mind, performance measurements. That is, in my mind, simply documentation. Performance measurements looks at a trail, a mile of trail, or an acre of land and says, what value is the public actually getting out of this? Because if we're measuring it just on miles of trails, our propensity is to bell them where maybe the public doesn't really want them. And I think that we need to be more diligent about those types of things. And I think also we do need to actually be much more cognizant of this issue of economic sustainability, and I think a couple of the representatives alluded to that already. I've worked in these systems for 30 years, and I got to tell you, based on my understanding of the direction of public financing beyond legacy and the inherent and organic growth of systems over time, we're really at a point of get into a problem here. I think it was Steve Taft from the University of Minnesota some 7 or 8 years ago presented at a best practices session, and he essentially said, folks, wake up, because the systems that you're proposing here and the growth that you're talking about simply will not be sustainable in the long term. And I think I would suggest that we need to really be cautious about that. And finally, I think we do need to institutionalize this practice of disruptive thinking, because, you know, again, observing how data is used and not used, appropriate and so forth, as I've witnessed, even the projects I work on, is I think we have to challenge ourselves collectively more to just have the counter opinion floating out there, irrespective of what system you're in. And then finally, my last recommendation is to move forward and fully implement a statewide system for collecting and managing information and making that available across systems to ensure that we know what others are doing and we gain assurance that all our resources are being wisely allocated by lessening the concern for duplication of efforts. And the Go Minnesota, as part of the 175 project, we've created what we call the Go Minnesota web-based system, and that's set up to do inventory work. We'd be more than happy for Metro Parks and DNR to use that same system and expand on it. And to my knowledge, they do not have that centralized inventory system in place themselves. So that would certainly be something that I could see happening as well.
I assume that centralized system does not go through the state information systems?
That is correct. It's a, yeah. And, well, yes,
one of the directions that we're moving, thanks to one of my former Republican colleagues who's unfortunately no longer with us, but one of the directions that we're moving is to get all information centralized in one place. One of the directions that I'm looking for, sorry, Representative Torkelson isn't here because he's been very helpful to me in the clean water part of this, is to make sure that all information from legacy projects goes into the centralized state information system. So, you know, that's something that we might
Yes, and Madam Chair, keep in mind that one of the things that we want to make sure that this system does is it is not a GIS expert-based system. One of the things that we saw as a limitation of the university's framework plan is an inventory is that it was static. You couldn't do anything with it. We want this to be a system where literally anybody that has approved access to the system can go out and inventory a park. And in fact, that'll be a requirement for getting funding through the Greater Minnesota approach going forward. If they don't do certain things, they just won't be in line to get funding, because we want to have proof that what they're asking for is actually needed. With that, Madam Chair, I guess I would just summarize by indicating that I personally believe that Greater Minnesota is well poised to move forward. The message is loud and clear that we want to be careful that we don't overreach and that we come back with a system plan that is justified, that is very closely coordinated and with the Minnesota DNR's plan. And frankly, I see sitting on the Future Strategy Committee there, I see that as being extremely vital, because the DNR obviously is going to have to make choices themselves going forward, what they do with the system. And the notion to me is that without Greater Minnesota being an active partner, for them to think differently about a park or a trail becomes very problematic. What do you do with it? And in Greater Minnesota, I can tell you right now, if having worked with many of those county boards, if there's no possible route to some funding, they have no reason to talk to anybody. With that, I'll open it up for any questions that you might have.
Well, my question just on the last sentence that you said, in the county boards needing a route to some funding, are they willing to look at some contribution of funding from them too?
Sure. I don't think any of those doors are closed. And frankly, as we go forward and define the priorities, one of the criteria that we'll be looking at is local commitment, and that commitment might come from three cities, a township, and two counties getting together and saying this is the project that we think has the greatest merit in our region, and therefore we're going to support it in this way and let the chips fall where they may from there.
That's exactly one of the things I'm hoping to see too. So is there someone? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Schoenbauer, thank you for the detailed testimony, and I appreciate that, especially from a perspective of Greater Minnesota. Do you know, as we talk about, the consensus group, the advisory group that came up with the solution of 40-40-20, mm-hmm. Do you know that, you talked about at length what you are doing for the Greater Minnesota plan. Do you know what DNR and the Metro folks are doing, talk about the other two legs of the stool as far as their plans, where they are with it? Have you communicated with them? Have you been collaborating together? Can you give us a little background on that?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative. I'm not that, having worked with Metro over the years, I certainly respect the fact that they've done a lot of planning work and have the opportunity to do that. Where they are in individual planning, I'm not sure. In the context, though, of Minnesota DNR, there's clearly an opportunity right now, paralleling each other, to collaboratively plan, frankly. And I think that's a good opportunity that shouldn't be lost. And that's part of the reason that this 40-40-20 thing is so important to me personally, is that everybody has spent the last year and a half trying to build up trust and getting beyond parochial interests, and here we find ourselves back in the same spot. For relatively small amounts of money, when you talk about $1 billion, to me, the better and more prudent thing would be is for the legislature to simply say, we're going to move ahead with this idea, but we also have expectations 3 years or 4 years out. You better come back with your this and that and the other thing, or we're going to really have something to say about it. But we really do need the opportunity in terms of Greater Minnesota to move forward and get our work done, frankly.
Okay, we do. Oh, I think Representative Hausman, then Wagenius, then we do want to move on. So, oh. Okay, Hausman.
Madam Chair, I think you were beginning to get at what my question was. Now, I haven't served on any of these funding committees, budget committees, for a few years, and so maybe I should know this, but my understanding is, in terms of operating and maintenance, with state parks, it's a state responsibility. But with regional parks, that there has to be some local government that's there. If the state fails, there is a local government that still has responsibility for operating and maintenance. And so I heard you get at that question, but I didn't know structurally, will there be a local government that's required to have ownership so that if the state fails, there's a local government that provides operating and maintenance?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative. My understanding at this point is that those same rules that apply in Metro will apply essentially in Greater Minnesota. And as part of the process, when a county or a city or some group comes forth with a request for money, that they will be obligated to do certain things. One of the things they'll be obligated to do is have an up-to-date master plan, and that master plan will require them to define who's taking care of what, who's taking care of maintenance and operations and programming and all of those things, so that we have assurance that when they get the development money or the acquisition money, that those pieces are in place and frankly agreed to beforehand. So a lot of the rules and a lot of the processes that Metro Parks does are in fact transferable in these kind of situations, and they're proven practices that we want to take advantage of.
Okay. Representative Wagenius and then Representative Green, and I do need to get on to the next
just
people.
Quickly, in response to Representative Hausman's question, right now the Metro Parks get a little bit less than 10% of their money from the state operating dollars. So 90% of the operating dollars is coming from the locally. So, and somebody I'm sure will correct me if I'm wrong about that, but I think that was the testimony that we had. But for the testifier, you have talked about these low-hanging fruits. I assume then that there is a list of those that you could give to this committee, so that we would know how to appropriate money, specifically what we're buying. So when we give money to DNR, we know what we're buying. We give money to Metropolitan Parks, we have a list, we know what we're buying. So I think it would be helpful if we saw that list of low-hanging fruits and what they cost.
Madam Chair, members, Representative, again, our process is starting informally here on Thursday, and by my personal belief is by this fall, when the monies would be actually allocated, we can have a very clear understanding of where that money would be spent at that point. But I think we can also take a look and see and give you at least a list of our early indicators as to the type of projects that you could see, the quarry parks or, you know, whether parks in Duluth or Rochester or wherever,
okay,
that would give you at least an example of what we believe to be fitting the criteria that we've set for it very well.
Okay. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was just a clarification for a question that was asked earlier to the previous testifier. As far as the 130 parks, it's been kind of insinuated that these are new parks and you're buying property for them to establish these parks. Or are they new? Are they already existing parks? Or can you clarify that?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, those are defined as regionally significant existing parks. They basically met some very, very limited baseline criteria. And again, all of them are perhaps legitimate parks and trails, but which ones of those actually rise to the level of you considering regional is going to be determined. I suspect it will not be 130 parks when we're done with this process. What number it will be, I couldn't tell you right now.
Okay. But thank you very much, and Representative Erdl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just continuing along with that line of questioning just a little bit. So of the monies for Greater Minnesota Parks, do you anticipate that to be used to buy new parks, to add on to land in present parks, or to do work within the park?
Madam Chair, Representative, let me give you a sense of the criteria that would be our baseline review, and you'll get a sense of how parks will be picked. If we look at a natural resource-based regional park, very similar to what a metro park would be, it's going to have to provide a high-quality outdoor experience. It's going to have to be regionally significant in terms of its natural or historic landscape. It'll have to be well-located and connected to serve the regional population, and it'll have to fill a gap in recreational opportunity within a region. So you can start to see that the parks that meet that criteria the best are going to rise to the surface, and the parks that don't are going to fall to the bottom of the pile. That's just inherently what we're going to end up doing. So those parks that are near populated areas in greater Minnesota will tend to be the ones that rise to the surface and so forth. That being said, we also don't want to lose sight of the Cuyuna-type opportunities, which, you know, those are the kind of things that we want to find, is what otherwise might be missed in the discussion turn out to be really popular not only in greater Minnesota but also destinations for those of us that live in the metro. So we want to be open to all of those things, and I think our process and our working with the folks, the professionals in greater Minnesota, will uncover that and give you a list at the end of the day.
Okay, then I'd like to move on now. Thank you very much, and I'm sure we'll be back to speaking with you. The next person is Tom Ryan from Olmsted County Parks and Rec Director. I think one of the people I get to apologize for not bringing him on when he was first here. So, Mr. Ryan.
Excuse me. Madam Chair, members, I'm wearing a tie from Ireland. My daughter just went there and brought it back, so this is a great opportunity for me to wear this.
Okay.
My name is Tom Ryan. I'm the Olmsted County Park Superintendent. I have roughly a 30-year career providing resource management, environmental education opportunities for the people of Olmsted County and their guests, namely about a 12-county region. Indeed, people come from all over the world to visit Olmsted County Parks, and while they're at Olmsted County Parks, they go through the Mayo Clinic. I knew this group would get there. Madam Chair and members, I have a statement that's 3.5 minutes long, so you can read deep. I certainly will be available for your questions afterward. I may give a short preview of it, that it really goes back to speak to my professional and personal impressions about the consensus model and the legacy funding committee. Many of the members are here, and I want to just kind of buttress, if you will, the importance of that committee and the work that we did. So with your indulgence, I'll give that a read. I should also mention, in the spirit of fair play, that I presently serve as a vice chair of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trail Coalition, and I also serve as the alternate chair on the Legacy Advisory Committee. Excuse me. In 2012, it was my privilege to serve as one of the 9 members seated on the Legacy Funding Committee as a natural resource and park professional representing Greater Minnesota. As you know, the legislature created this group to try to find some common ground associated with the legacy funds appropriated to parks and trails. It was this group's charge to come together and find a solution to what had become a very contentious, in some view, bare-knuckled debate every time a funding cycle rolled around. The very real needs of the 3 providers in our parks, Metropolitan Council, and greater Minnesota had led to political infighting, partisanship, and a polarization of our great state citizens into out-state and metropolitan factions. In my experience as a park professional and as a citizen, the vast majority of Minnesotans found the bickering and posturing to be petty, mean-spirited, and at times rank with hyperbole and half-truths. In short, the Legacy Amendment, arguably one of the greatest natural resources initiatives in the history of the United States, was rife with parochialism. As one astute park user commented to me, the time for politics was when we fought for the amendment. It's a Minnesota amendment in purity. I sure hope it stays that way, or I won't vote for the next one, God willing. The comment has merit. That's why you instructed us to convene in 2012. The Legacy Funding Group was formed to compel resource and park professionals from the respective groups to come together to find some common ground related to the funding disbursement, that would serve the interests of all Minnesotans as related to their park and trail needs and wishes. The Legacy Funding Committee achieved the goal, and we stand by it. We urge you to accept our recommendation without prejudice and without influence. It is critical to note that this agreement among the providers was not, sorry, a walk in the park. This consensus was reached after hundreds of hours of dialogue, negotiation, candor, thoughtfulness, and perhaps most rewarding, mutual respect. Everyone in the group brought their legitimate needs to the table, legitimate positions to the table, and solid cases for why their respective agencies deserved a larger cut of the funding. This was not a perfunctory exercise. It was hard work and intense. But more, it was also wonderfully candid and epitomized the best that Minnesotans have to offer. No one walked out of this task completely satisfied, and all three agencies represented understood that they had to yield to some degree to the interests of their fellow Minnesotans. The Legacy Funding Committee stands united in defending the work that we did on the legislature's behalf, and I dare say that we do so without apology. We accomplished the goals that you set for us, and we urge you to accept our finding in its entirety for the good of the people and for the good of the green spaces that everyone in this room holds dear. Thank you.
Well,
any questions?
Can you answer the one question that I started doing it, which is the thing that goes counter to my sense of logic? The idea of appropriating $100,000 each year to figure out how you're doing the process as you're doing the process, as opposed to putting more of that money out front to figure out what your process is, what your criteria are, what your requirements for matching support or matching funding might be, and moving on from that.
I think I can, Madam Chair and members. I'll try. You know, all the L-State projects that have received state funding, at least in my career, have at that time, they've all been thoroughly vetted by, in my professional experience, by the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and I believe it was the Office of Management and Budget. So there's really been no projects that I'm aware of, at least in Olmsted County, where a project wasn't thoroughly vetted before it was awarded. And I think there are many DNR officials here that could probably speak better to the history of that. So if I understand your question correctly, Madam Chair, that will continue. So the discussion was about a disbursement of, you know, roughly $40 million a year. The 20% that the consensus group deemed Outstate's portion will still be thoroughly vetted as related to the quality of the projects, who they serve, etc. So I think it has been done, Madam Chair, and it'll continue to be so.
Again, I just want to compare it to what happened when the Metropolitan Park System was started, which is best of my memory. Put $30 million out in bonding money the first time in the mid-70s. And then for Metro Park bonding, mm-hmm. the Metro system had to match these bonding dollars 3-2, right. state bonds for 2 Metro bonds. We already were dealing with a system that had billions in acquired lands, like the Como Park system right. in St. Paul, Chain of Lakes in Minneapolis, and so forth. And the Metro area agencies are putting $70 million in property taxes to maintain the system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, last year we had the problem of the legislature removing the match for the Metro right. grants, which was a little bit of a stick. Sure. But, you know, are we going to see something like that coming to support? Obviously, the numbers are much smaller, but are we going to see something like that coming to support this Greater Minnesota Regional Park System?
Well, I think we'll have to. And the reason for that is that we have the highest regard for both the primary providers. And one of the things is that this is going to be, and I've been advised, and as a park professional, I've watched Met Council in particular, that's a competitive process. And it doesn't, as some of you know far better than I, projects in Met Council don't always meet muster and also get put on the long list. That same type of competitive quality will be part of this. One of the things that was a real concern with Met Council representatives about, well, and it was valid. They said, you know, how, what are you going to do with the money? And it took me personally a couple of months to kind of, or a couple of meetings to figure out that their question was it was an excellent question, and it actually helped us find some common ground, because they wanted to make sure that all of the projects were in the spirit. The illustration we said is this, you know, we don't anticipate a water slide in, you know, somewhere else in Minnesota. This has to be in the prescription of the legacy plan, and everybody has agreed to that. I don't know, Madam Chairman, if that answered your question or not. We have a lot of things that we need to continue to do to make sure that we can gain the trust of this committee, and as related to our efforts and our rightful place as a third provider.
Okay. In the interest of moving on, mm-hmm. I have next thing on our agenda is the statement of support from Bob Bierscheid, who was in here and was going to be read by DNR, and I think they can hand that to us so we can do it. And then we'll, in the interest of making sure that we get to the people who are from out of town, we'll skip Arnie Steffrud at the moment and go to Al Liefert, the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition, the Douglas County Parks Director. Is Mr. Liefert here? Oh. Great. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Representative Kahn, you are formally reading Robert Bierscheid's letter into the testimony today, so that doesn't need to be read out loud. That's what you just said.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Excuse me.
And we'll have it.
Thank you very much.
You were the one who was going to read it.
Yes.
Okay. If you have a copy of it, we'll pass it around right now, or if you give it to a page, we can copy it. What?
Thank you. You have the letter in your committee packets, is my understanding.
Okay, great. We'll assure that that's part of the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Okay, you need to say who you are, by the way.
My name is Emmett Mullen. I'm a planner with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. I've worked there for 18 years.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We don't seem to have that statement, so if you give that statement, we'll get it copied now and get it into our... Okay, Mr. Liefert.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Al Liefert. I'm the park superintendent for Douglas County. It's Douglas County. Alexandria is the county seat of Douglas County. It's 120 miles west of here on I-94, and it's in what some people call Minnesota's new micropolitan areas. I'm representing the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Coalition, and I'm currently serving as president of that organization this year. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I want to make one quick correction. Before we go forward. Earlier in testimony, the Legacy Funding Committee membership, County Commissioner Pat Swatsky from Wright County was listed as a park superintendent or a park employee in Wright County. And Commissioner Swatsky is a county commissioner out there, and he served as our liaison to the Association of Minnesota Counties. I want to state for the record that I and the organizations that I represent wholeheartedly support the recommendations made in the report titled Parks and Trails Legacy Funding. We deeply appreciate the work that the nine members did, the members representing the Department of Natural Resources, the Metropolitan Council, and our organization. I have been asked to have a letter from Chuck Woken, who was our liaison to the nine-member group, read into the record, and we'll do that the same way that you're going to do with Bob Bierscheid. So I'll hand it to the page. You can read that in. Okay. Oh. had some handouts that that I passed around because I want to give you some information today on the work that we have been doing that has become to be called the 175 study. Our hope is that each of you will, after these testimonies, use the authority that you have to make these budget recommendations that were made by the Legacy Funding Group law in this session. We thoroughly support them. Committee members, Greater Minnesota Parks has worked diligently these past 18 months on directives that were outlined in that 175 study. I prepared some interim reporting information for you and for this hearing, and I'd like to begin with a summary of the first four cycles of how legacy funds were used in Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails. I don't have the benefit of the overhead, but there is a colorful two pie chart that you have been delivered, I believe. And it outlines how the funding cycles from 2009 through 2012, the first four cycles, how they were used in Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and how they were used in Greater Minnesota Regional Trails. I felt that two charts were needed because the two types of outdoor recreation facility are so innately different than one another that the breakdown of monies went a lot different in the two categories. If you have found that, you will see on the top chart, and using the same four pillars that we've all been talking about, connecting people to the outdoors, acquiring land and creating opportunities, taking care of what we have in collaboration. When a park project was a successful applicant to the Legacy Grant Program, 51% of the time, or half of the time, a Greater Minnesota Park Agency used that money to acquire land. The remaining 50% was split not quite equally, 27% connecting people to the outdoors and 20% on rehabilitations of existing properties. And we take that to mean that somebody added a facility to make it more usable. I think one example is that $175,000 was used out at Quarry Park to add another swimming beach to that facility that most people seem to recognize as having been one of the stellar projects. In Isandy County, there was another project where they spent $178,000 constructing trail facilities and picnic shelters within a park in Isandy County. That's what we meant by connecting people to the outdoors. And that 2% that was used in collaborations, that is the money that was spent on the 175 study. It's the $175,000 that was allocated directing us to carry out these four missions. So that's the way that park projects went down in the first four cycles in Greater Minnesota. You can see in that second pie chart that it's quite different. Acquisition of land became only 14% of those projects, while the large majority of it, 79% of the money, is used connecting people to the outdoors. That is, building trails that connect facilities to communities, to one another, whatever it happens to be. A percentage, 7%, I mean, it is $674,000, so it's not an insignificant amount of money, but 7% of the money was used to rehab existing trails in the state. Members, that is one of the things that's not apparent in the chart, though, is that by removing the project funding cap in the last session, that was a boon to Greater Minnesota Parks in that it enabled the what we've been talking about as low-hanging fruit, the outstanding projects that take a lot of money to carry out. The removal of that cap enabled several of those projects to move forward in a very significant way. The examples that I brought along today are the Bertram Chain of Lakes in Wright County. That's just an incredible project out there. It took nearly $2 million to complete the acquisition of this, I think it's 184-acre No, that's not even right. It's 1,800 acres. It's an entire property around a lake that borders Monticello, the Bertram Chain of Lakes property. The Camden Regional Trail Project out in Lyon County was able to be funded, I think, to the tune of $900,000 or something when the cap was removed. And it's a really great project that connects Camden State Park to the city of Marshall. That Bent Tree project down in Freeborn County, those projects, when we had the artificial cap of $500,000 in place, it actually prevented us from carrying out the very types of projects that Legacy is, we think, in place to carry out. I have a second set of information in the packet, and it's got a small green logo up at the top of a piece of paper, and it's the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition's logo. That's how you'll see it. And what that is it's some initial reports on the first charge of the 175 study, which was establish protocols to determine the origin of visitors and to project the potential use of Greater Minnesota parks and trails. An extensive research project analyzing the numbers of ways that agencies count visitors preceded this testing, the testing that is being reported here today. We chose to use the methodology that was developed for use in Minnesota's metropolitan regional parks. Included in the handout are the count results from three test sites that were completed in 2012. Those test sites, I'll just review them a little bit with you. Beebe Lake Regional Park in Wright County, it's an active swimming beach near St. Michael. The park is about 67 acres in size. The annual use was projected to be 46,000 visits per year. A number of things are learned using these types of counts. The majority of visitors to this swimming beach outside St. Michael come from Wright County. They tend to be between 25 and 44 years of age. 63% of the visitors were. That's the kind of information that we got back from the first round of counting using the Met Council's method for counting. We also counted people out on the Lake Wobegon Regional Trail in Stearns County. It's a paved bicycle trail that connects St. Cloud with Sauk Center. On the western end, it connects into the Central Lakes Trail, which is a state trail that continues on to Fergus Falls. The count study indicated that 312,000 annual visits occur on the Lake Wobegon Trail. Only 7% of them winter visits. The rest of them are either spring, summer, or fall. That's the type of information that we got out of that. This count is particularly interesting, though, because during that same time period, the state of Minnesota was conducting use counts on the Central Lakes Trail. They are essentially the same trail. One ends, the other begins, just outside of Osakis. But the methodology that was used in the state survey was developed to count use hours, periods of use, and the specific recreation activity being counted. Is it hiking? Is it biking? Is it running? Skateboarding? What are you doing out here? These two counts illustrate the difficulties that are encountered when you try to compare results using seemingly similar surveys, but surveys that use a very different methodology. Jeff spoke to some of the difficulties that we have when comparing data. It's not that the data doesn't exist. It's really difficult to put it all together, though, and make sense out of it. The third place that we counted was Oxbow Park and the Zolman Zoo. It's operated by Olmsted County. It's located just outside Byron. And, of course, Rochester is nearby. It's a 620-acre park with a zoo in it. It receives close to 224,000 visits per year. Visitors tend to come from the two counties that are adjacent to that. They are Olmsted County and Dodge County provides a number of users out there. Half of the people were between the ages of 25 and 44. In an effort to gain a better understanding of park visitors, Olmsted County actually asked a couple of more questions. What's your primary reasons for visiting the area? And the other question was, what, if anything, is missing from Oxbow Park? And by and large, people either said, we need more bathrooms, or it's great, nothing's missing. But just anecdotally, that's what came out of there. Our obligation in the 175 study is to continue counting through the 2013 season. We'll be working with Duluth, Sandstone, Bemidji, Douglas County, Lyon County, and a trail in southern Minnesota this year, and continuing this count, visitor count survey, analyzing data, or collecting data at any rate. Obviously, though, it's going to take years and a substantial investment to be able to provide the same level of data that state parks provide to you, or that metro regional parks can provide. They've been in the game a long time. We've had 18 months. We think that we, over time, will be able to, but that's where we're at right now, so it's just some interim information for the committee. There is one final handout that I gave you, and I think it has some relevancy to the discussions that have been held earlier today. And the heading on this piece of paper, it also has a colorful pie chart on it, says local funds versus state funds comparison 10 years, Douglas County, Minnesota. It's who I work for, so we don't have the benefit of a statewide agency to require or ask us to do this type of collection, so we do it agency by agency. And you can see from 2004 through 2013, this is how parks were funded in Douglas County. We spent $2.9 million, just about $3 million on parks out of the property levy. We spent $1.7 million of your money, of our money, on property acquisitions and developments. That's what we do with the state's money when we operate or when we use it in Douglas County. The chart on the left with all the numbers in it, that's the operating expenses. So in Douglas County, over 10 years, 63% of the money to operate our parks came from the local unit. 37% of the money that was spent on our parks came from the state, but all of that was used to either buy land or to build facilities. All maintenance costs, all operations costs are handled through the property tax levy. That's very common in Minnesota, by the way. All of these 130 parks that we've been talking about are owned and operated by some city, some county, some township in Minnesota, whether they're regional parks or not. Committee members, there are 2.5 million Minnesotans living in communities that are not part of the seven-county metropolitan area. These communities serve the same role in greater Minnesota. Regional parks serve the same role in greater Minnesota that they serve in the metropolitan area. Near home outdoor recreation opportunities. No greater Minnesota park agency has had the benefit or the requirement to work under a unified state organization heretofore. We believe that going forward it would be in the best interest of Minnesota to create such an organization. We think it should be small, efficient organization, an organization that can work with the counties and cities interested in parks of regional significance, and to focus on selecting projects that will produce the best outcomes for Minnesota and that align with the 25-year legacy plan.
Is it your thought that that $100,000 a year, or year that we're putting out, is going to go to do that?
Yes. Partially.
Okay. Representative Erdahl has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And let me apologize in advance to the next three people on the list. We're obviously not, since we're at the end of our time, we're obviously not going to get to you. Believe me, we will be continuing this discussion. But Representative Erdahl, question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I thought this would be the last time we talked about parks and trails.
Oh, I know. I did, too. I'm very bad at I've got to have somebody beating me on the head with a clock through these meetings.
Now, there is no end to this, actually.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Mr. Lifford, just one quick question. Do you have any statistics on the average length of stay in parks? Is it hours, days, minutes?
No, sir, I do not.
That might be something interesting to try to compile.
It certainly would be. It was the focus of the DNR's trail survey. They asked specifically, how long have you been out here? But it was a different study. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. My apologies to the other people. I guess you should expect it if you've been watching us for a while. So, okay. See, meeting is adjourned.